Welcome to the Graveyard Girls podcast with Amelia and Natasha.
Hello.
And welcome.
It's the Graveyard Girls. Welcome. Welcome to our witch trial season.
Yes, this is our third episode. So thank you for those that are joining us for this. I have quite a big case for you today. And it had to be a big case because there was so much on it. So I'm going to look at the trials in Salem for you today, which is obviously a mammoth case. Well, I think basically when you look at witchcraft, it redirects you, every time it redirects you to stuff to Salem. Do with Salem. So I obviously couldn't not touch on this. And for any of those that have already listened to episode 1 and 2, you will know, obviously I'll make a very brief mention of it in the history of the trials. And I really didn't want to go into it in too much detail on there because, one, it would then be really repetitive for this, but two, there was no way I could bite-size it and really, like, sort of, I don't know, do it without leaving too much out. Like, it would leave you too much on a cliffhanger. So then I was like, it's just going to be easier to do a whole episode on Salem. So that's what I'm doing now, basically. So
I think it's weird because it's not the smallest trial, but because it happened in America, it's the most well-known one.
Yeah, it's an odd one because for how big it is as well, I don't know if it's just so well documented, but the trial actually only lasts a year. Now, you look at all the trials around the world, they are over like a decade or whatever, and the amount of stuff that happens in this 1 year, I'm literally like, I'm looking at this now, like, and my notes that I've got for this, I've got like 14 pages. It started off with 17, but I basically took a little bit of it out to add to another episode because, well, I was slightly worried this might be a 2 hour long episode.
So it probably still might be.
It might still be. So, yeah, it was such a big thing to do, and I got so much information. And the thing is, well, I didn't really want to leave anything out because I'm quite aware, obviously, with it being such a popular case, I'm quite obviously conscious of the fact that a lot of other people have already probably made a podcast about this, have already touched upon stuff. And I didn't want to leave anything out. But we obviously need to make this a bit more unique to us. And obviously, I know our points of view, we could maybe come up with something a bit different about some of the things that's happened. Our own thoughts on it might be slightly different to someone else. But the basic facts were obviously the same. And I wanted to make sure I got every bit of detail that I could because I didn't want to miss anything out. Like, some of these, obviously, I probably have not done as big an episode on it and maybe brush over certain bits. And I really didn't want to do that. But in finding that information, there was so much stuff. It was just, I was bombarded with information. Like, I literally could have made this episode like 4 or 5 hours long with the amount of information I've got. So I've kind of tried to be a bit clever with it. And some bits I've taken out and put into other episodes, like some of the facts.
See, that's what it was like with my German one that will be coming up. That is the most well-documented one I've come across. It might be similar to the Salem ones, if not more, that there was no way I could cover the whole thing.
Yeah. And this is it with the witch trials. Like, I know, obviously, most people know it was such a massive thing that happened in history. You can't deny that. But to fit it in and do it justice, it's so hard to do. Because at first of all, yeah, we've got 27 episodes. We knew we were never going to cover every single witch. That was impossible. But we thought, we can cover a good chunk of this. And it's not till you start writing it up that you realise there's so much stuff that was still missed out. I mean, in a way, it's good because it means future Patreon episodes, future normal, even our free streaming ones. There's a lot of witches we can cover. Because I've got a lot of stuff that crossovers into murders and things. So there's some that's like, I really want to do this because it's a bit different. It would be a good part of the trials. But then I'm also sort of thinking, do I maybe put them to the side so that I can include them in a normal episode?
Yeah, because in my Scottish witch trial, I also took an accused witch and doing a case just on her because it felt just pointless to put her in just the Scottish one, so she's got her own episode.
And that's it. Like I said, it's so difficult too. You want to touch on everyone, you want to give everyone the light that they kind of deserve, because I said pretty much the majority of them were murdered needlessly. It wasn't they hadn't even committed a crime as far as I'm concerned.
And also most of the time, especially in some of the English ones, they're anonymous.
So, like I said, what I found as well that struck me so much is how many of them, the names are just listed. And the crimes aren't even listed, like, for what they did. There's just a name. And I think, I really want to know what it was they were accused of. Because they might have genuinely committed another crime, then they've gone under the, they've just managed to conveniently put it under the witchcraft, which did happen in a lot of cases, because there is quite a few that I would class as they have actually committed a crime, like an actual murder, or had a hand in a murder. But I think maybe whether it was due to evidence or whatever else, they were probably struggling to get it in a court of law. So the way they did it was accusing them of being a witch, and it meant they could try them again under a witchcraft act.
Yep.
And then that way they got them convicted. And some of these generally were crimes, but then there's also such a massive number, and especially when you look into some of these Salem ones, they clearly didn't commit a crime.
No.
And I think it's really difficult when you look at that. It just seems so far-fetched and so out there. You think, how the hell would someone even want to do that? But then you forget it was a very different time.
I think that's why we started doing the trials, because it's like, how on earth did this ever happen?
Yeah. And it is, to us, like just the concept of it. And I think even, like, we'll obviously touch on it in other episodes, but what witchcraft is today is so massively different to what it was. There's obviously elements of it that still exist.
Yeah.
But what you look at as what a witch is now, it's nothing to what it was the way back then. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's really strange. I think it's quite hard when you look through some of these, because I'm looking at it and thinking, are you actually being serious? Like, you want to almost like shout and scream at them. Like, why are these people so fucking stupid?
Yeah. It's heartbreaking that these people had to die.
Yes, and like I said, well, even, and I'll definitely touch on it today, I know I mentioned during this, I think it was the second episode that we did, about one of the women in particular. Obviously her children were, one of her children were accused and died, and you think, these kids are like infants.
Yeah.
And like, you're literally murdering innocent people.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah.
It's not something we will ever agree about.
No. So yeah, so on the note, I suppose I should probably get on with the case. So, for those of you that don't know, the Salem trials began in the spring of 1692. So, in comparison to your other European ones, very late on. But I do think a big part of that is, and especially when you look at some of these people, they've actually were originally born in places like England and then have travelled over. So, I think a lot of the witch hysteria was brought with these people as they moved into America.
Yeah.
So the chances are some of the witch trials have sort of gone on in the past. It was very similar to how I explained the Canadian ones, in terms of obviously a lot of Canadian was French people. So I think they've experienced trials before. They've obviously gone in search for a new land. Things have died down, but then things have gone wrong, and it's very quickly like easy to revert back into that mindset of, well, it must be witchcraft. And all it takes is one bad apple to decide
you're a witch,
you're a witch, and that's it. Hysteria starts.
So they think they're safe because they're in the new world, and then nope,
it's all wrong. And then you're mixing with people that have already settled there for a long time, and maybe they are easily influenced. So yeah, I think that's very much how this starts off. But
I think also because there's a few of the colonists over there that they feel quite isolated. So I think
there is an element in a weird way, because there is obviously a lot of people. It is still quite well populated, but again, there is that isolation. And I think America is one of those weird ones, as it's so many different people and so many different cultures from around the world now all merged into one place. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. No. It's good that new cultures are coming together. It creates, like I said, a whole new country.
Yeah.
But at the same time, one, some of these are influential, and others are also bringing in stuff that they really probably shouldn't be bringing in. But the way they describe it to others as people that have never experienced these type of things, so it's easy in a way to manipulate them, if you like.
Yeah, of course, because like, look at them, they don't like the Native Americans because they're outsiders. So then it's like, that's what a witch is, that's an outsider in with them,
and that's anything that they couldn't explain,
they have
bad
to get rid of.
But yeah, so basically the Salem trial started when a group of young girls in Salem Village, Massachusetts, claimed to be possessed by the devil and accused several local women of witchcraft. A wave of hysteria spread throughout colonial Massachusetts, and a special court convened in Salem to hear the cases. So, at the beginning of it, it obviously more than likely originated from the belief of supernatural going-ons at the time. Obviously, everyone was superstitious. Yep. There's obviously also heavily church involved. Which also adds to a lot of the superstition, because again, going back to the whole science things, a lot of stuff isn't explained very well at this point. So if you can't explain it, it's more often than not, where's it come from? There's a good chance it's bad.
It's the devil.
Yeah, it must be the devil. So, and that then links into more specifically in the devil's practice of giving certain humans the power to harm others in return for their loyalty. Now, trials had already emerged all over Europe, as we've obviously already discussed, and we had had trials in Connecticut as well, about 13, nearly 40 years before, but they'd sort of, in between, there wasn't really much on it. So Salem's residents were also suffering the harsh realities of rural Puritan communities, including the after effects of the British war with France in the American colonies in 1689. So this was literally a handful of years before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a recent smallpox epidemic and fears of neighbouring Native American tribes who had rivalries with affluent people within Salem had only fuelled this hysteria. So there's a lot going on. We've got smallpox, we've had a civil war, and we're struggling with crops. So you add a combination of those things, we're already brewing for a recipe of disaster, if
exactly.
you like.
Exactly, that's what contributed to the European ones, because at that time in the world, it was basically a mini ice age.
Yeah.
Nothing would grow. It was colder than normal. So it just, it's a melting pot of all these things that contribute to Eurowitch.
Yeah. And yeah, they need someone to blame.
Yeah.
But yes, so obviously, of course, then that led to the tensions rising, and residents became suspicious of their neighbours and grew to have fear of outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
So in January of 1692, 9-year-old Elizabeth Paris, who was the daughter of Samuel Paris, and he's a minister in Salem, and her cousin Abigail Williams, who is 11, began experiencing fits. This included violent convulsions, contorted body movements, and uncontrollable bouts of screaming. After a doctor, William Griggs, would soon diagnose the girls with bewitchment, then other girls in the local community started to experience similar symptoms. The girls included within this group were Anne Putnam, Mercy Lewis, Elizabeth Hubbard, Mary Walcott, and Mary Warren. Now, as we go along, you will realise this whole group of girls are them basically become the main accusers of Salem. So they've all started to experience these fits. I think it's probably a link with the smallpox.
Okay.
Maybe something to do with a fever and illness.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what do you think it was? Do you think maybe the first two are genuinely ill?
Yeah.
And then the others saw that they were getting attention?
I think there's a strong possibility. I also think, personally, there's an element of the church bringing in. I think some of these other girls could have maybe been ill for a day, but not as severe as the other girls. And the church have hopped on it.
Mm.
They're young girls, they're impressionable. It's easy to get them to go along with a story. All you've got to tell them, I suppose in a weird way, it's like influencers and a bit like social media now. You've got young teenage girls going on, they want things. People going, oh, well, you do this. And like, look what attention it gets you. What do these girls actually do? They follow those trends. I think this is still very much an element of that. It's just, it's all coming from the church this time.
Also, yeah, it's probably boredom as well.
Yeah.
Those two got attention. What did they do to get attention?
That's it. So they follow it along. So then it starts off with three main women being accused. And they were brought before the magistrates Jonathan Corwin and Jonathan Hawthorne. I don't know whether it's Hathorne or Hawthorne.
Hawthorne.
Even as their accusers appeared in the courtroom and still displayed spasms and contortions, both Sarah Good and Sarah Osborne denied their guilt. Tituba would confess.
Now, I've heard of her.
Yes, she's a massive one in these. And I'll be honest, I'd heard about her before.
Mm.
I had no idea she was actually linked to Salem. I don't know what I thought she was linked to, but I thought she was earlier on. I thought she was a bit like Greek goddess sort of thing. I don't know if it's the name.
It kind of also sounds like the witch from The Conjuring. Oh, I can't remember.
I think there's obviously been a lot of adaptations based on these women later on.
Yeah.
But when I heard it, I genuinely didn't realise she was part of Salem. I thought it was something else.
I have heard of, obviously, the Salem witch trials, and I haven't done a lot of research into it. I've just looked into it. I think that might be why I know her.
Yeah.
But her name is such a familiar thing.
Listen, I genuinely thought she was linked with something else. Mm. So I'm basically now, so I want to start talking about the accused, but I want to go into detail about these three women first before I look at the rest of the trials and how it spread out.
Okay.
So firstly, I'm going to look at Sarah Good. Now, I did briefly mention her in episode 2. So for anyone that's listened to that episode, you all know a little bit about her already. Now, she was born in 1653 to an innkeeper named John Sollott. However, his estate was in litigation, and so Good would go on to see virtually nothing of his estate when he died. So despite the fact she was born into a pretty decent family, she, as an adult, well, young woman, she's left with nothing, pretty much.
Okay.
She would then go on to marry a servant named Daniel Poole, who died in debt in 1686. So again, misfortune pretty much plagues her. She is fortunate enough to marry a second time, and this time she marries William Good, hence the name Sarah Good. But the couple were doomed, as they were stuck with the debts of Sarah's first husband. Now, as it was at the time, she obviously basically carried on with her husband's debt. So even though I think there's nothing to suggest it here, but I feel like she married a second time pretty quickly to try and sort her financial status out.
Yeah.
And try and obviously make sure she's got a roof over her head. Now, it wasn't long after that they got married that the couple were then left homeless and renting rooms in other people's houses. They had two young children. Now, William worked as a labourer in Salem in exchange for food and lodgings, but it became increasingly difficult for the family to find a place to stay. The family was regarded as a nuisance to the town, and by 1692, they were basically beggars.
Hmm.
So this placed Sarah as the perfect target and was obviously easy to accuse her of witchcraft.
Yeah.
Now, she was initially accused of afflicting Elizabeth Paris and Abigail Williams, but as time went on, others would jump in to accuse her. So that was basically from the main group of girls. Now, spectral evidence was also given against her, which is a bit like where a spirit is the one that attacks you. So not necessarily the individual witch or accused witch, that what they are accusing of is that this witch told the spirit to harm the other person. So by default, they caused whatever the harm was.
That's difficult because she's obviously well known in the town for being
a prejudiced before, which for me is why I feel like is the only reason she's tried in the first place. Now, of course. Sarah Good was the first to be tried in Salem, and some suggest that she was chosen specifically for that reason, obviously with her being a beggar, and that most people in Salem were in support of ridding Salem of her presence. Now, both her and her daughter, Dorothy, and her husband were frightened into testifying. Both her and her daughter would obviously be accused, but Dorothy, her daughter, and her husband were frightened into testifying against her. Now, if you remember in the previous episode, I mentioned about her daughter only being four, and she was also claimed to be consorted with the devil and be delusional. Now, she's four, as far as I'm concerned. She can't give evidence. If you look now, you wouldn't be asking a four-year-old for evidence, and even if you did, it's not reliable by any means. I can see how easily for a four-year-old they would go, right, you're saying when we did this, blah blah blah, all they've got to do is threaten you with two things. You're a child, you're going to do what the adult said, whether it's your parent or not.
Or you probably wouldn't even do what you're 4-year-old, you're doing your own thing,
and making up stories.
Yeah.
You think, like, how vivid your imagination are as a young child.
Exactly.
And then I think, like I said, the husband was already in a difficult situation. Both his wife and his daughter is got to try and save his own skin. There is another child on the outside. This one is the only other one at the time that isn't accused.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah's obviously also pregnant at this time with what would be their third child.
Yeah.
So he's got to try and make a life for this other child that's spare. His wife and his daughter, if you like, have already been accused. There's nothing he can do about that. He's got to save his own skin. How does he do it? As harsh as it sounds, the easiest thing to do is accuse your wife. I'm not saying it's right, but if you've got to try and save your own skin and you feel like there's no other option, what do you do?
Yeah. Do you want your child to be an orphan, or do you want them to have at least one parent?
Yeah. And also, I suppose there's the element of, I'm not saying, obviously, we won't have them, so we can only speculate, but is there a thing of his life, in a weird way, was only ruined after he married
this
Sarah?
This is what I was going to say. Does he genuinely think she is a witch? Because look at all the downfall that's happened before.
Yeah.
Her first husband died.
So in a weird way, he's got a chance to escape.
Yep.
He can go, well, look, I was fine. Nothing. I didn't do anything wrong until she came along. She bewitched me.
Yeah.
She's dragged me into this. And that might not happen. He might have genuinely been a very loving husband.
Hmm.
But it's easy to see. Or even if he was genuinely a loving husband, like I said, if you're trying to save your own skin,
you might
be pushed beyond any limits. He's clearly been tortured at some point.
Yes.
So what do? You confess to things that aren't necessarily true.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, Dorothy was also accused, but we know that she was later released. Now, her husband protected himself by saying that he was concerned that Sarah was close to becoming a witch, not that she actually was one.
Okay.
So he's kind of saying he does throw her under the bus and he doesn't at the same time. Now, Sarah Good did refuse to confess and repeatedly said, "I am falsely accused." However, Good then did accuse Sarah Osborne of afflicting the girls after she witnessed the accusers fall down in fits in the courtroom. So this is where Salem was a little bit different from a lot of the others. They brought the girls in. The girls obviously went around the town accusing people. Like, they'd go around and kind of the witch hunters sort of took the girls, if you like, and sort of said they went around the town. I think in their heads they already had pre-ideas of who they were going to accuse, but they basically then brought the girls before them and the girls go, "Yes, they're a witch, blah blah blah," or they'd suddenly fall down in fits. So then it's like, okay, well, they're a witch. Then what happened is then in the courtroom they brought them back in and these girls continued to randomly have fits as soon as they were put before these women.
This is what I want to see, the documents of them having the fits. Because I want to see what these fits look like. Do they look genuinely like fits? Or is it like clearly
yes them putting it on? Some of them, I think, could be very convincing.
Mm.
But there's also others I'm a bit like, okay, it's a bit convenient.
Exactly. And if it's convenient...
Yeah. There's an air of suspicion, I think, about it. You've got to take it with a pinch of salt.
Yes.
Now, only one person came forward to defend Good, and this was a man. And he came forward and said... After a girl had accused Good of stabbing her with a knife, she was then said to have produced a knife to prove it, like the tip of a knife. But the man had said that the tip belonged to a knife of his and that he'd witnessed the young girl break it. So at one point, it kind of looked like it questions the girl, brings their integrity into question.
But how shit are these knives?
It's quite old times, isn't it? It's thinner metal where it's not made I don't know, it's not stainless steel, is it?
No. Shitty knives.
But yeah, so at one point it kind of maybe looked a little bit good for her. Mm. It kind of threw up that the girls were lying, but then that was only one girl. So if you throw the one girl out, there's still the other group, the rest of the group of girls, and they're having these uncontrollable fits.
I'm just thinking of a kid breaking a knife. Like, what are you doing there? You're just nothing.
Yeah, and the next week, this is the knife she's stabbing with, and I've got the tip, I pulled it out of me to prove that...
So where's your stab wound?
Yeah, exactly.
You're a witch because you have no evidence of being stabbed.
No, Sarah tried to cover it up by healing the wound, probably. That would have been an excuse.
So she stabbed the child and then healed her?
Yeah.
What's the point?
To cover her tracks, I don't know. So rather than then throwing that evidence out, the judge told the girl to continue with her accusations, but reminded her to stick to the facts. So I think from what I can make out from it, I think the girl did generally sort of like, she didn't initially make that accusation. Then I think maybe she got a bit carried away and threw this out there. Mm-hmm. I think maybe her questioning was over a few days and I don't know whether maybe... I feel like there might have been an element from the church that they were a bit like, look, we need a bit more hard evidence. Like, you've got to come up with something. And what's the first thing that popped into her head? She stabbed me with a knife and she knew she could get hold of a knife. She knew she could get her hands on these things. It was just unfortunate for her that the other man happened to have seen her. It's also
escalating what happened.
Yeah, from her initial...
Yes, she stabbed me.
And then, like I said, that's then technically an attempted murder. So, and that's far worse than anything else. So, again, it's almost then like a trial by like murder for witchcraft, isn't it? It escalates it into something else. So it makes it very hard then. It becomes more of a scandal, doesn't it, if you like?
Yes.
So, ultimately, despite the fact that this man did come to her defence, Good was found guilty and she was sentenced to hang.
Mm.
She was, however, pardoned until after the birth of her child. Obviously, of course... She gave birth, but the child soon died afterwards. And then Good was hung. As she stood at the gallows, the Reverend asked her once more to confess to save her immortal soul. Now, she still refused to confess, and it was said that she screamed, "You're a liar. I'm no more a witch than you are a wizard. If you take my life away, God will give you blood to drink." So she was, like, refusing to confess. Basically, to the end. She never did confess, effectively. And I like the fact that she shouted something at them and against them. I'm quite pleased that she did that. So,
don't you need to read the back of that page?
No, that was page 2.
Okay. Just double checking.
Yeah, it's fine. So this brings me on to the second part of the second one of the three, which is Sarah Osborne. Now, like your other case, it gets very confusing. There's lots of Agneses, there's lots of Sarahs and lots of Alices. So we've got a lot of Sarahs in this one. Now, Sarah Osborne lived with her second husband, Alexander, at the time of her trial, and her house still stands today, although it was sort of like collected up, relocated and reconstructed to a new location on Maple Street in 1914. So the actual structure of the thing, still, it's the same thing as what it was before, although I feel like they will have had to do some sort of repairs to that over the years, so I don't know how much of it is technically the original wood.
There's a house down the road that was like near town and they moved it brick by brick.
Yeah, so this is effectively what they've done. So apparently this house still exists today and you can go and visit it. Like I said, I do feel like there is parts of it that are not the original structure because they would have had to probably repair some of it by now if we're going back to the late 1600s, because it's wood as well. I know wood lasts a long time, but also I'm not sure.
Termites.
Watertight. Yeah. I also feel like it smells really musky and damp. Probably very stinky in there.
They're like, oh, that's the witch.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Now, leaders and Sergeant Thomas Putnam and his brother Deacon Edward Putnam, Joseph Hutchinson and Thomas Preston were the ones who filed a claim against Sarah on behalf of Elizabeth Paris and Abigail Williams. Implicated in this was also Anne Putnam and Elizabeth Hubbard. Now, the four girls would claim that Osborne's spectre pinched them, pricked them, and Elizabeth Hubbard also claimed she was stabbed with knitting needles, and all claimed that Sarah encouraged them to write in the devil's book. Now, like Good, Sarah Osborne was an easy target. She was ill and in her late 40s, which is quite old for the time. Mm-hmm. She was frail and possibly suffering from depression, according to other records at the time. Mm. She appeared to be fearful and a very paranoid woman. So to me, it almost gives a bit of a schizophrenic sort of vibe to me, or maybe lots of what today would be like bipolar or something like that.
She's clearly mentally ill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she'd also been outcast and was subject to a lot of gossip, mainly because her second husband, who had previously been her servant. Now, this is very unheard of. Mm. So her second husband obviously married, so he was below her, which is normally it's the other way around for starters. It's a younger maid woman that marries up. But the fact that her husband was actually a servant, I don't know, I don't think I've really ever heard of another case of that.
No.
So some claimed that they'd lived as husband and wife before marriage, which of course was a massive scandal at the time.
Because the church.
Yeah, it's a big no-no. During the trial, Osborne claimed that she was more likely to be bewitched than that she was a witch. So I feel like as well, it kind of went against her, but I also feel this ties in with a paranoia. Mm-hmm. Like I think the statement on its own is a very good thing. She's saying like she's more likely to be bewitched than be the witch. But at the same time, is that her paranoia feeding in? Like something's happened. Like I imagine her to be quite a skittish woman.
Mm.
And she's saying like, this happened. Like she's looking around all the time and people are going, God, she's a mad woman. And she goes, no, it's not me. Like, I don't know. I haven't got any records of it here, but I feel like she maybe says like, I saw this or this person was following me. There was this shadow. This was here. And they're going, she's the witch. But actually I feel like she thinks she's being plagued by something else. And it's very easy then to accuse her of witchcraft.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Because she can explain these bizarre things, which are obviously things in her head, but in her being able to explain it, people going, well, she's seen these strange things that no one else is seeing.
It's odd that they aren't accusing the husband, because he could have murdered the first one, so he married her. That's why she's acting crazy, because he's doing stuff to her.
Yeah.
Because if it was a man being crazy, she'd probably be accused of doing that.
Yeah.
And if his first wife mysteriously died, who would you accuse?
Well, yeah.
But so it's weird that they're not accusing him.
It's just, I don't know. The whole thing to me is they're feeding off her paranoia.
Especially because he's a servant and he's married up. It's very, like you said, it's unheard of, kind of.
But yeah, so for me, it was apparent that she was struggling with her anxiety. Yeah. And on the stand, she confessed that one time in her sleep, she saw and dreamed that she saw a thing like an Indian, all black, which did pinch her in the neck and pulled her by the back of the head to the door of the house. Now, for me, I think a lot of that has come from a lot of the fears of women and children who had been attacked by Native Americans mm-hmm. at the time. So for me, it's then you're bringing in things like racism.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they really saw it as racism oh, no. back then.
No, because even though they're the ones that went over there, they're like, oh, well, they're the savages.
Yeah.
No, it's their land.
So I think as an already paranoid woman, yes. then you've got these other fears. Because there was records at the time. I know it's very hard now. But I do feel like, as much as obviously the new Americans attacked Native Americans, I do also think like there is occasions where Native Americans have obviously attacked back. And I think they've obviously been very well documented. But those things have then been fed into the hysteria mm-hmm. of the locals, mm-hmm. especially the women and the children. These stories have probably been brought back by men. Maybe some women and children have been snatched or attacked. That you feed that back in. You give that to a woman that's already paranoid. What's the first thing she's going to do? It's easy for her and her paranoia to link another tribe exactly. with it. So another mark then made against Osborne was that she had an ongoing disagreement with the Putnam family. Now, Sarah's first husband was Robert Prince, and they were married in 1662 and lived on a 150-acre farm. So she was very well off.
Yeah.
Now, when Prince died in 1674, he named the executors of his estate to his two brother-in-laws, neighbouring Captain John Putnam and Thomas Putnam, and his land was left to Sarah to be held in trust until their sons were of age. Now, in 1667, Sarah married Alexander Osborne, obviously, and the Osbornes would now go to court to try and gain full control of the estate. So even though he was lowering a servant, it's like now he's married her, so he thinks he's equal. He thinks he has an equal stake to the estate.
See? Which? Why are they accusing him?
Well, so her property dispute had obviously also involved her sons and was another separate trial at the same time, trying to disinherit her sons, and so this didn't obviously paint her in a very good light.
No.
And she was then sent to jail on the 7th of March. So I think for her, she's got so many things going on, and it just really isn't looking very good for her. Now, 2 days later, she was put in shackles since the afflicted claimed that they were still tormented by the woman's spectres. Now, Osborne came to be the first victim of the Salem trials, succumbing to poor jail conditions, and she passed away in prison on May the 10th. A Boston jailer wrote, in accordance with her death, to the keeping of Sarah Osborne from the 7th of March to the 10th of May when she died, being 9 weeks and 2 days. So that's how we know that she was definitely in there. So I don't think it was a nicer death, but maybe it was nicer than being hung. She just never made it that far. But I think she was pretty frail before she even got in there.
Yeah.
And we already know they would have been starved when they got in there. Mm-hmm. She probably was tortured and beaten in between.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think everything, in terms of her, everything was completely against her from the start. The sons had obviously turned against her, but I think the sons had probably been turned by her first husband's brothers.
Yeah.
So in that sense, and then like I said, I think that servant that married her, did he have other intentions in the first place? Did he seduce her because he wanted to better himself? Or did he genuinely love her? I don't know. You can only speculate in that circumstance. So, yeah, I think everything was stacked against her to begin with. I don't think she really stood a chance, did she?
No.
Unfortunately. So that then brings me on to Tituba, who was the third one from the first three. Now, she was a black slave, and she was enslaved to Samuel Parris, who, if you remember, was the first girl that was the first two girls that were afflicted. He's the uncle.
This is why I remember her. Yeah.
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 And he was a Puritan minister. Now, obviously, it's the Puritans that are going around accusing a lot of people of being witches. So, he's a big part in this. Now, she was actually the first to confess, and would go on to give some of the most explosive testimony. At the time, slavery in the colonies was on the rise. Mm-hmm. Reverend Samuel Parris, brought to Tituba in Barbados, where she'd been enslaved since her capture during childhood. He brought her back to Massachusetts in 1680. She was just a teenager at the time. Now, at some point, it's thought that she had married another enslaved man named John Indian, and that she had a daughter called Violet, but there's not much going on them. So a lot more of it is kind of speculation, but there is records of people with the same name at the time. So
okay.
I don't know whether it's 100% true or not, but people suggest that it was her husband and child. Now, Tituba cared for the Parris' children. Of course, Parris' daughter and niece were amongst the first girls to start showing strange symptoms. The girls had been playing a fortune-telling game that involved dropping an egg white into a glass of water. Supposedly, the form the egg white took in the water would help predict whom the girls would marry and showed the shapes of their future lives.
Okay, first off, you could argue that's technically witchcraft. Also, yes. What the hell is this
weird game? It's like a weird thing that you do, like girls do it asleep, yeah. Of some weird superstitious, yeah. Sort of thing.
If my husband's going to look like an egg.
I think the egg white's then supposed to disperse into an image, or I don't know if it's supposed to tell you a name or what.
It said it's supposed to look like your husband.
Well,
it's going to look like a blob.
a bald man. Maybe, I don't know. Now,
maybe we should try this.
Maybe. Now, apparently after seeing a coffin shape in one of the glasses, they began barking like dogs, babbling and crying hysterically. Now, though she apparently had nothing to do with the girls' attempt at fortune telling, which was a sin in Puritan religion,
thank you,
Tituba did try to help them. She baked what was later be known as a witch cake from rye meal and urine and fed it to the girls. Mm-mm. Yes.
Mm-mm.
I know. Disgusting.
That's the wrong time to take sex. They have to eat it?
Yeah. No. And it's supposed to apparently cure them of, stop them from, I don't know, marrying or dying from whatever. I'm presuming this coffin was obviously supposed to predict their future, and that meant they had imminent death, so...
So they're going to eat a pea cake.
Yeah, a pea cake.
That's going to make them not die. Ew.
But yeah.
It's going to make them ill.
Yes, definitely. Well, that's probably why the fit started, drinking someone else's urine.
So you bake it?
Yeah, I think so. Also, that's a stinky cake.
That's going to smell.
Yeah, but then to be fair, you think of the times and the living conditions. Smells. Everything was fucking stinky. You probably didn't smell it, to be honest.
A baked pea...
I don't want a pea cake. No. Now, Parris, who had already been begun praying and fasting in an attempt to cure the girls of what he saw as possession, became incensed when he heard that Tituba had fed them the cake.
Yeah.
So she's not kind of not helped herself. I think in a weird way she was trying to help, but she's also landed herself in some shit here.
Yeah, I also have a question. Whose pee is it?
Hers.
Hers?
Yeah.
Why?
Which, and I'm pretty certain it's toxic. So, is that explaining the fits? To me, I think that's a possibility. Now, obviously, Samuel, obviously, in a weird way, I think, as we later go on, Samuel isn't obviously a good person. He kind of becomes one of the witch hunters. But initially, he's obviously praying for the girls that have been possessed. I don't think he necessarily starts off with a really bad view. I think he's kind of then turned by other men within the group. He's not a good guy in the end, but I think...
Maybe because it's like
he's his so daughter. Religious, yeah, and his knees. He's and so he religious.
Thinks, he thinks because the first lots of prayers aren't helping.
Yeah, and also this slave has come from another country, which also kind of gives me weird like voodoo sort of vibes.
That's where it would be coming from. That's probably where the pea cake comes from.
So yeah, like I said, Tituba hasn't helped herself because she's literally she's doing what she thinks is right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also massively against other religions at the time. So she's sort of, like I said, landed herself right in the middle of it. Now, this is where Samuel gets a bit out of line. But you could argue,
he's doing what he thinks is right, which is praying. She's doing what she thinks is right, which is accordance to her religion, maybe.
Yeah, but it's not the main religion, and she's also a slave, so she's
the much witch.
Below it. Mm. Yeah, she's below him, isn't she? And then this is where Samuel obviously starts to get out of line. He beat Tituba in an attempt to get her to confess that witchcraft was the reason behind the girl's increasingly odd behaviour. Now, Tituba did confess and embellished her confession with a tale of how she'd been told to serve the devil. She and the girls apparently rode on sticks, she confessed, and that a black dog told her to hurt the children. Now, there's a chance that she obviously confessed, not expecting to actually be accused at that point. And obviously the New England witches were obviously traditionally marginals, outliers and deviants, but none were of colour at this point.
I think if you think about it as well, she's a slave. She's not treated right at all.
Yeah.
She's probably just rebelling against them. She's like, yeah, this is what's going, this is what's happening.
And but I also think there's an element of, she, like in other cases where they go, she thinks she's giving them the answer that they want. I think there's an element of that. Like, she's partly rebelling, I think, to start off with. Then it continues, and I think she gets to the point where she's like, well, I'll give them the answer they want and I can maybe get away with it. Do you see what I mean? Like, I could spare my life.
She's probably already beaten anyway. So, like, what's one more?
Yeah. So, she also confessed to seeing two cats. One, a red one and a black one. So, by red, I don't know whether they mean a ginger cat or whether they mean, like, a genuinely red cat, like devils.
I assume a ginger.
Yeah. So, she said that they served me and then confessed to pinching the girls and told the court she'd signed a devil's book. She was indicted as a detestable witch and was left in jail for more than a year. Parrish refused to pay her bail. Tituba would later recant and told magistrates that she'd made everything up after her master had beaten her. Mm. Eventually, an anonymous person paid to Tituba's bail and she was set free after 13 months in jail. Now, some said this was her supposed husband, but if he's also enslaved, I'm not entirely sure how he would have paid for that.
No.
She obviously had no property or any rights, so she then disappeared from historical records and no one knows what happened. So, yeah, because initially when I looked at her, I was like, ooh, she's a mysterious person. But then I thought, I can't not mention her in the Salem episode because she was a big part of it. So she's another one. She's clearly marginalised before she is. So you look at these first three. These first three, for me, they're outsiders. They're scapegoats.
Yep.
They never stood a chance. They were always going to automatically be accused. It's only as the trials go on that some of these others, the reason they get away with it is because the accusations are a bit stupid. And they were good members of society before, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You would assume that more enslaved people would be accused more.
I think they slightly are as a little bit goes on, but then I think more the type of servants that they had, even though people had slaves, not a massive amount of slaves were in this area at the time. So it was more they had servants, and this was people within their own community. So they obviously did dob in everyone in their own community, otherwise we wouldn't have had the witch trials at all. But I think they were a lot less likely to do that than there were another slave. But I definitely think for me, this is where Salem kicked off, because these first three, they were literally scapegoats. If they hadn't have started with this, I don't think Salem would have took off in the way that it did.
Probably not.
For me, this is what started it. Obviously, physically, it was the girls that started it. But it was these three women in particular that meant the hysteria spread through. And that's then what laid the path for all of the others to be accused. Because I don't think these three women were witches at all. But I think what happened with them laid the base and then put in people's ideas, the heads and the stories that they could use to start accusing other people. Because as far as I'm concerned at this point, the Connecticut ones had almost been forgotten about. They weren't that close to them. I think people had just sort of passed over it. I think that then this, like I said, it brought it all back into light. It gave a good story. There was bad stuff going on. It now gave people that fuel to start making up other stories. It then became a tit for tat. So someone did something I didn't like. Now we can make up a story against them.
Yeah. I hope Tituba escaped and lived a long, free life.
Yeah, I did look into other records to do with her, to do with other mysteries, and there's lots, but people are throwing out a lot of theories, but there was nothing with any concrete evidence. Now, a lot of people suggested that she ran away to other places near, like, New York, and she set up her own life. Others say that she moved on to another enslaved yard, but moved in with other black families. So she then, even though she still remained a slave and, like, a servant, she actually did better than she had before, and she had more of a life.
Yeah.
She went on to have her own family. But there was no concrete evidence of that, so I didn't want to particularly say that that's definitely what happened.
No.
So, as far as we're concerned, she basically vanishes off the face of the earth. But I suppose you can speculate what happened to her afterwards. So in the end, after these three initial women, there's estimated that hundreds were then accused. Not many, obviously, then were actually executed for it, but I want to touch on the main ones, and there's about 20 of them that become the main accused and are executed. Now, the first one of those is John Alden. Now, he's in his mid-60s. He was a fur trader and previously been a military officer, a sea captain, and was a long-time associate of Salem's merchant Bartholomew Gedney. Now, he had 12 children, so he's got a big family, and he'd had no contact with the accusing girls prior to May 1692, and he spent most of his time in Boston, not Salem. So it's kind of like, for me, this is where then the witch hunters, they start taking hold, and they start taking the girls around other local towns and villages and picking people out. Okay. And I, in my head, as much as they're going around, I feel like there's a preconceived thing of, maybe someone's already dubbed them in, like, we need to get rid of this person, we need an excuse. So they almost, I feel like they do these girls like a travelling show, and then, like I said, they then, they've already got ideas of people that they're actually going to pick out, and they kind of pre-warn the girls, and they're like, right, okay, make sure when you get to this person, you start having a fit, and that sort of thing. That's, to me, is how I imagine it. Now, John recounts the bizarre behaviour of the girls, and how they would suddenly go into fits simply because he looked at them. He'd had his military sword taken away from him because the girls had said that it was that was an object of witchcraft. Alden claimed that he'd now gone mad believing these girls, and that the whole town had gone mad believing the girls and their accusations. He referred to the girls as juggling wrenches. He did, however, survive. So he spent a bit of time in prison and was later released. So he kind of got away with it in the end. But I like how he just calls them wrenches.
Well, he's correct.
So he's sort of the first one to go like, look, this is just nonsense. This is silly little girls. Why are you even listening to them?
Mm.
I also think it's quite strange, obviously, as a man, because it is predominantly women. There is a lot of men in the Salem one, to be fair. It's not 50-50, but there's a lot more men in it than I was expecting it to be.
That may be why he survived, because he's a man.
Possibly. So next was, well, this is kind of a bit of a family. There's William Barker, Mary Barker, and Mary Marsden. Now, William Barker was a 46-year-old farmer who was in debt. His 13-year-old niece, Mary Barker, and niece by marriage, 27-year-old Mary Marsden, were accused of witchcraft on the 25th of August. They were accused of woefully afflicting and abusing. Now, by the time of their trial, it was thought that the only way to save your life was to confess. William made an elaborate confession, saying that he'd been in the snare of the devil for 3 years, that the devil had first appeared to him like a black man and perceived that he'd had a cloven foot. The devil demanded he give himself body and soul. He claimed he tormented the three accusers, and that he signed the devil's book in blood, and that the devil had promised to pay his debts in return. He also stated that he'd attended a meeting of 100 witches in Salem Village, and he explained that the devil's intention was to take over the church and begged for forgiveness. Now, 13-year-old Mary also confessed, claiming that she'd attended the meeting of witches with her uncle. She would also go on to accuse Goody Johnson and Goody Faulkner of witchcraft. Mary Marsden also confessed, that's William's wife, and she said that all three of them had been witches, and that she claimed to have been visited by a black man after her mother's death and a period of melancholy. Now, William Barker escaped prison and fled, and a bond was paid to get Mary Barker out. And then Mary Marsden was then later acquitted at trial. So none of these die, but they're very quickly thrown in. And for me, they all come from ones when they've been accused by someone else.
Yes.
So this is when it really starts branching out. And the only reason a lot of these people are dragged in is because they've been accused by someone else at their trial.
Mm-hmm. I think, was his debts paid?
No.
No. Well then. Not a devil. Not, no devil.
Yeah. But then again, like I said, if the only way was to get to survive was to confess.
I know. But
it's not right, but you can see where it's come from.
Mm-hmm.
So this then brings me on to Bridget Bishop. Now, she was in her 50s, a widow. She was belligerent. She was also seen as provocative and quite brash. She was the first to actually be hanged, although not the first accused, because obviously we had the other three women. She would be executed on the 10th of June. Accused on the 10th of June, 1692. So this is sort of partway through the year, so nearly 6 months after the first ones. Yeah. Now, she was accused of sundry acts of witchcraft. She apparently pinched, choked, and bit her victims. And she was also said to have a third nipple, which was supposed to be a sure sign of witchcraft.
Yeah.
So apparently this was discovered when they did an examination of her. I couldn't find really anything else about her, so I don't actually know whether she... obviously, she was executed, but it didn't really say much more about her other than she was a provocative woman. So in my head, I imagine when she was put on the stand, she was a bit shouty and she sort of gave it her all. And I think that probably went against her, which was ultimately why she was found guilty.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And like I said, a lot of these already, they're quite old. They're in their 50s, 60s, 40s as well. So they're all elderly people, aren't they? But they are elderly at that time. So like I said, they're just plucking the old ones off. Is it, like I said, have they got a population issue and I'm just trying to get rid of, bump them off a bit quicker?
No, they're probably just like, they're grumpy. We need to get rid of them.
Yeah, grumpy old lady, grumpy old man.
Yeah.
Next is Martha Carrier. Now, she was a mother of five in her late 30s. She was accused of leading a 300-strong army of witches to murder and afflict people. She claimed her accusers were insane. One witness claimed that Martha's craft caused him to lose a fist fight with her son.
Oh, for God's sake.
I know. I told you there'd be, before when I switched about it, there'd be some silly accusations in there.
He's a weak man.
Now, Samuel Preston claimed that it was Martha that caused one of his cows to die. Several others accused later on would use her as the person who had introduced them to the devil of witchcraft. She refused to confess and she was hung on the 5th of August, 1692. So I really like her. She was one of them that was really thrown in with some of those stupid accusations or whatever is out there. Like that one I mentioned the other week about the man that fell out of the tree.
You shouldn't be in the tree in the...
I just, I don't get it. This is where some of them, they're just stupid. So then this then brings me on to Andrew and Richard Carrier. Now, these were Martha's sons. They were tortured and confessed more names of their supposed witches. Richard confessed to being a witch, but the following day on July the 23rd, John Proctor sent a letter from jail to Boston and a clergyman there, in which he said the torture was being used to force them to confess, naming both brothers as victims. And surprisingly, they were actually set free. So for me, it's a bit strange. It's like they got these really strange accusations and everyone's believing it. But sometimes someone can throw in that these people are a victim, the girls are lying, and they get away with it.
But there you go. I think they sent it out of town.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
The town's in hysteria.
Yeah, so and you're putting an outside person. Yeah, okay. I hadn't thought of it like that.
They're of sound mind because they're literally writing down the letter.
Yeah, and I suppose as well they were only implicated after others had accused them. So I guess they weren't initially accused by the original girls, that they were dropped in by other people.
Yeah,
and obviously their mum. It'd been accused. So yeah, I suppose I hadn't really thought about that in terms of the outside. But yeah, they are a bit different. That's probably why they have got away with it, but also I don't think they did anything in the first place, so they haven't got away with anything. But yeah, so then that brings me on to Elizabeth Carey. Now, she was imprisoned for 2 months. Carey's husband, Nathaniel, had travelled with her to the trial in a bid to clear her name. Unfortunately, that didn't work, and so she was imprisoned, although he did arrange for her escape. She did escape and fled to Rhode Island. Nathaniel was then arrested for his part in her escape. He was jailed but released a few days later and joined his wife. So they were a bit of a unusual one in the sense that she never actually went to trial or was acquitted because she did a runner.
That's so good. Never heard of that.
No, neither have I. I thought she was quite interesting when I was going through things. It was a bit different. I think obviously a lot of it was to do with her husband, and I think if I can remember from the little bit I could find on him, I think he sort of had a hot, pretty decent job, so I think he had the means to sort of help her escape. I don't think by any means it was easy, but
no, it's also good that her husband stood up for her.
Yeah. And I think because the witch trials in America weren't widespread like they were in other countries, they could go to another town and no one say anything.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think it probably did help them.
Yeah.
So then next is Sarah Cloyce. Now, she was 44 and she was held in cramped prison conditions for months on end. She was arrested after Samuel Parris was speaking in church. And as he spoke, oh, this is the one I mentioned the other day. I forgot about her. She's absolutely brilliant. Now, as he was talking in church, Sarah reportedly allowed the door to slam behind her.
Mm.
It was interpreted as an act of protest, and her little sister, Rebecca Nurse, who would later also be accused of a witch, her sister accused her of that, and she was interrogated in public but maintained her innocence. She was, however, Sarah, released later in 1693, but spent a lot of time in. So basically from her, she crept in a bit late, and as we discussed last time, church doors are heavy.
Yeah.
And she didn't actually slam it. I feel like she let it close behind her, but because of the noise it makes, and you imagine the acoustics in a church, she'd interrupted him. And at that point I said, this hysteria spreading.
How dare she?
Yeah, she was in the middle of his sentence. He was obviously very proud of what he was saying, and he was like, right, she's bringing the devil into the church, she's consulting with the devil.
You cannot bring the devil. They made up the rule that it's consecrated ground.
Yeah.
You cannot bring the devil.
So unless they're trying to make it that she summoned the devil, like in her form, like she's trying to bring, I don't know, like upon the rest of the town. So as soon as you leave the church and leave the church ground, she's like summoned the devil. Mm. And that was the warning.
I don't know.
The church realised she was summoning the devil and made a big noise as soon as she came into one and everyone. I don't know. Is that the theory behind that?
They shouldn't have a heavy door.
Yeah. And he shouldn't be so vain.
That's what it is. It's like, how dare she interrupt me? I was in the middle of my perfect speech.
Yes. Ruined it. Now, this next lady, there really wasn't much on her, but her name is Elizabeth Coulson. Now, she was only 16 years old, and I also like this lady, she's a bit badass. She escaped capture twice, and she was never recaptured after she escaped the second time. Good. So she, again, could never be brought to trial, because she did her enough. Good. But I do feel like a big thing in America was, because it wasn't widespread trials like all those European countries, I think you literally could go into another town and hide quite easily. It wasn't a problem.
Yeah. It's not like the English ones or the Scottish ones where I will touch on it and the Scottish one, but the registrars go to other towns and be like, have you seen this person?
Yeah. And this is it. And you think how big America is as well.
Yeah.
As long as you can travel, and like I say, do you think all the work then would have been seasonal work? It would have been a lot of farm work. It's so easy to get up and down that country. Mm. I know it's technically slow because you've not got like transport like you do today.
Mm.
But it won't be hard for you to assume another identity and move into another town and escape.
I'm glad she escaped twice.
So am I. So yeah, she seems a bit badass for me.
Yeah.
Now, this next guy is the one... this is the only guy to be killed by being pressed to death.
Oh,
yes. So he's the only one that's ever had any record of this. So he's very different, this man. And this is Giles Corey. Now, he was a farmer in his 70s. Originally from Northampton in England. So not far from us.
Hmm.
So he's a little old man. And
some quarrels with Northampton.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, okay, Sasha. Well, he's in America now, so you can't blame him. And it was hundreds of years ago.
No. Just Northampton, the town, not the man who was...
Yeah, the little old man.
Yeah, 70. Yeah. And he was pressed to death. Oh, my God.
No. I imagine him as being like a little cute old man. Yeah. I mean, he might have been really grumpy and miserable, but we don't know. But I imagine he's a cute little old man. Now, he was a prosperous land-owning farmer, which is quite unusual because a lot of the other people were sort of peasants, if you like. But he's doing quite well for himself. Now, prior to the accusations of witchcraft, Giles had been arrested of beating to death one of his servants. A little bit naughty.
Aren't servants, are they? They're enslaved people.
So they did have servants as well.
Oh, okay.
Now, at the time, corporal punishment was permitted against indentured servants, so he was exempt. So basically, you're actually, at that point, if you murdered a servant for bad behaviour, it wasn't considered a crime. So you were allowed to punish your servants. So, which is why he was exempt from the charge of murder. He instead was charged with unreasonable force and received a fine. He was caught up in the witch trials after first accusing his wife of being a witch. He denied the accusations when he was accused, of course, and he refused to plead neither guilty or not guilty, which is where the pressing comes in.
Okay.
So he signed off as a sweet little old man, and now I'm a bit like, a bit naughty Giles.
I'm a little bit like,
Now, according to law at the time, a person who refused to plead could not be tried. To avoid people cheating justice, a process was set up. The prisoner would be stripped naked and heavy boards were pressed against their bodies. Then rocks and boulders were laid on the planks of wood. This was called the process of being pressed. So, obviously, Giles was subjected to this. Now, still refusing to plead, he didn't cry out in pain. After 2 days, Giles was asked 3 times to enter a plea, but each time he replied, more weight. So he was, like, pretty defiant. You feel like this is a 70-year-old man. He's proper stubborn. He's like, I'm not confessing. Now, some claimed that his tongue was pressed out of his mouth. So it was enough to force it out, but I think that's a bit weird. I imagine the planks on his back, so I'm not quite sure how that presses the tongue out, if they completely flattened him.
Well, if you go back to my methods of torture episode, they have the tongue ripper where they kind of like press it down and then rip it out.
Oh yeah,
so unless they did that as well.
But at first when I read it, I thought, man, they'd done that many planks, they turned them into like a pancake.
Yeah, exactly.
And it like popped out.
I'm very conflicted about how I feel about this man.
Yeah, so am I. He would then eventually die on September 19th, so he this went on for several days. I like how stubborn he was. He refused, so to me that suggests he was innocent of this crime.
Yeah.
He was a little bit naughty before. Naughty Giles.
No, I mean, he murdered someone. And then accuses his wife, and then it's like, no, I'm not one.
So, but then again, does that feed back into the whole, if, like, the professor, you accuse others, then, not that you can't be accused, but initially, you can't be hung for the crime, because highlighted...
He's ancient in these times. He's 70.
I'm surprised he survived as long as he fucking did.
He's probably had enough of his wife, so he's like, she's a witch, get rid of her.
Yeah, I don't like her, I don't want her. Yeah. I want a younger model.
I'm very conflicted about how I feel. But he's I like his stubbornness.
I do like his stubbornness.
But I don't like anything else.
But yeah, so I do think, in terms of this crime, I do think he was actually innocent of the witchcraft thing.
Yes.
So, he's an interesting one.
Maybe don't accuse your wife. Then you wouldn't be in this situation.
So, next is Martha Corey. Now, she was hung on the 22nd of September 1692. Martha had previously been an illegitimate child. Oh, sorry, previously had an illegitimate child. And he was also a mixed race son. So, at the time, very controversial. So she married a man named Henry Rich in 1684 and had another son. After the death of her first husband, she married then Giles Corey in 1690. So she's obviously been married to a previous man who's been pressed. Now, initially, the community...
Wait. She was married to the press man?
Yeah.
How old is she?
So... Yeah, but old men did have wives, didn't they?
I know, but I imagine like a 70-year-old with a 70-year-old wife, not a...
No, she was probably like 20. They didn't have any babies together, so...
This doesn't make it any less creepy. It's surprising that she got married after clearly having a child with a black man. You think that would make her an outcast?
You would, but at the same time, I suppose it depends on her family background. Mm. Was she lucky enough that she had kind of enough of her own money that she still was quite desirable to other men that maybe didn't have as much?
Yeah.
She might have been very charming, for all we know.
I just can't believe she's married to the press man who was 70.
She might have only married him like a few years. Well, she married him only a few years before, so he was already old. He wanted a wife. Yeah. She was probably pretty and young, and he thought, meh, don't really care. That she's got an illegitimate son.
Mm.
She's quite fit. I like her. She'll look good on my arm.
And then he accused her of being a witch. Yeah. And then he died.
Well, maybe he had a limp penis in between that time, and then so it must have been her.
He was 17.
That was the reason he had a limp penis, but he obviously blamed her. She...
It's God's will, that is.
Yeah, her pretty face wasn't working anymore. Now, initially the community was surprised to see her accused. She was well known for her dedication to the church. She'd never shown any support for the witch trials since she did not believe in them. She would, in fact, publicly denounce them. The witch trials... she would also publicly denounce the witch trials as well as the judges involved in the trials. She was outspoken in her belief and she said that the accusers were lying. Upon hearing this, Anna Putnam and Mercy Lewis accused her of witchcraft.
Exactly.
Which is how she gets dragged in.
You're so against it. Why are you so against it?
Yeah.
Because you are one. No.
Then Anne Putnam cried out in the trial that Martha had a yellow bird sucking on her hand, which was enough to persuade the jury of her guilt. Her husband, Giles, obviously also supported these allegations.
How does...
I don't know how a bird sucks.
Thank you. How does a bird suck? And also,
it's what
part of her hand?
I don't know. Why is it sucking her hand?
Yeah.
That's I don't want to say why it shouldn't be sucking a nipple, but that's my first thought. And it can't suck, it's got a peck.
I know.
I don't know, maybe they're just their understanding of anatomy of animals is not as good.
What kind of bird? Because I'm thinking of like a parrot, and they've got those scary tongues.
Is it like a little bit something like a little like great tip? Or whatever they are.
I was going to make a comment, but I won't.
I don't know. I don't get it. Like I said, these accusations are just so outlandish that you're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, if I was to then, I'd be sat in the thing. But then again, I think a lot of people probably did think these are fucking stupid, but you don't want to speak against it.
Because then you're accused.
Yeah, then you're accused. So everyone just goes along with it.
So, yes, some bird person was like, what's a bird person called? A paleontologist. It's like
a birds... twitcher? Are they
twitchers? Twitch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. A bird seeing person.
Yeah, one of them. One of them's like, birds don't suck, and then they're immediately accused. They're
but that would be me. Can you imagine me in the head? I would have been like, excuse me, that's not how it happens. And then I'm like, oh shit, now I've dropped myself in it.
I'm just sat next to you like,
And you're like, I don't know where. And I'm like, look, Natasha agrees with me. And you're like, hiding in the corner.
I have a big hat on so no one can see me.
But yeah, so I really don't get hers. But yeah, so next is Philip and Mary English. Now, they were a wealthy couple with two daughters. And they owned a trading company and a fleet of 21 ships and a wharf in Salem.
They owned a wharf?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, like, this is where it's very different from European ones. Mm. European, it was basically peasants.
Yeah.
These American ones, a lot of these are wealthy people, which makes me feel like it's more a personal vendetta rather than a class thing.
Yeah. Whereas the European and English ones, you could argue that they are definitely a class thing.
Yeah.
That's what I stumbled upon in my research, which I go into in the modern ones.
Yeah. But yeah, so for this, for me, like I said, obviously I know there's people from all classes in this, but for me, it's definitely, it's a personal vendetta sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, on April the 18th, Sheriff Corwin, and his deputies, acting on unknown accusations, entered the English's home, opening the curtains around the bed. Corwin ordered Mary to go with him and she refused. Mary appeared before a large crowd at Salem's meeting house on April the 22nd, 1692. The accusations against her aren't known exactly, but her husband had previously disputed property with community members and was a native French speaker, so this could be a factor.
Okay.
Now, Susanna Sheldon, who would later accuse Philip of witchcraft, also claimed to have seen Mary's apparition accompanied with a black man wearing a tall hat. So, another strange one. But again, a black man, which is featured in all the other ones, is what they've appeared. Now, I don't know if they mean a black man as in a black coloured person.
Yeah.
Or whether they mean like a black man, like the Grim Reaper sort of. Yeah.
Also, what kind of hat?
Because a tall hat, so a top hat?
Yeah. But an enslaved man wouldn't have a top hat. So I'm assuming, is it like Slender Man with a top hat?
This is why it makes me, like you said, like almost before, a bit like a shadowy sort of thing rather than a black person
of colour, yeah.
So, yeah. Now, Mary was transferred to jail on May the 12th.
No, I know what it is. It's probably the spirit of the nature all around them, trying to warn them not to accuse anyone of being a witch or get off the land.
Yeah, probably.
And they're like, you're a witch because you were hanging out with the top man, top hat man.
But yeah, so Mary was transferred to jail on May the 12th. Philip's vocal criticism of his wife's arrest then obviously made him a target. He too was arrested.
Yep.
Now, Susanna claimed that Philip forced her to sign the devil's book and threatened to cut her throat if she didn't. She also claimed that a spectre spoke to her, telling her that Philip had murdered him and that drowned him at sea. She then said Philip had told her never to mention that the spectre had told her that, or he would cut off her legs. This caused others to come forward and accuse him of similar things. Then on April the 30th, Philip knew charges were likely to be brought against him after his wife's arrest, and so he hid in Boston with hopes he could free Mary. When it became apparent that this was not helping Mary, he returned to face his charges. He joined his wife in jail. A Boston minister named Joshua Mooley helped them flee to New York after the Salem hysteria finally ended. They returned, though much of their property had been confiscated. The following year, Mary would give birth to a son, although Mary unfortunately died, and Philip continued with his shipping business, and he would then die in 1736. So he kind of escaped the problem.
Mm. What is this devil book?
So the book of the devil. So basically that's what's everyone, so you know, signing. When so basically, you know, when you're consorting with the devil, he's supposed to have a book, and this is like, you know, when you sell your soul, I'm guessing this is the equivalent. This is your stamp on it. So that's your legal agreement, you've signed it with the devil.
I get that, but
so, like, in terms of the girls, and
he
like,
would
the
take it away.
Accused, and once you've done that, then anything bad you've done is because you've signed with the devil. So the girls were saying, like, we didn't want to do bad things, but this witch made me write in the book, and that's why now anything bad that's happened that's linked to me, it wasn't me. It was because they forced me to write in the devil's book, then a bad act naturally followed. But I also like how he's been accused of effectively killing ghosts. Like,
yes. I want them to produce this book.
Yeah, I want to see the devil's book.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go for a hunt for it. Although this could open a whole can of worms.
Because none of this would stand up in a court of law. You need the devil's book to prove it.
Yeah. But also they don't want to touch that, because if you then handled the devil's book, then you're a devil yourself, so they can't handle it in court. Which is also how they get away with a lot of it, because we can't bring it into a court of law, because then we're all tarnished. So that's probably how they explained it to a lot of people.
It's so frustrating.
It is incredibly frustrating. But that legitimately is probably how they've explained it away to so many people. Because someone probably has gone, well, where's this book then?
Yeah.
Next, unfortunately, we're still going, there's a long list, was Mary Esty. Now, she was 58 and she was a mother of seven. She was said to be a charming woman by many accounts, but she found herself in the trials after being accused of choking her neighbour's hogs to death.
What? How the hell do you choke a hog?
I don't know.
They're massive.
But it was said that she used them as a sacrifice to the devil. So, consorting with the devil. Now, though one person in her defence claimed that the Navy Bill was drunk and that the hogs had died of starvation because they weren't looked after. So she was released on that count.
Okay, good.
However, a second warrant was issued after Mercy Lewis claimed that her spectre had touched her breast. Oh. She was condemned and hung on September the 22nd, 1692. So now that she's been violated, so that is very sinful.
Now, she shouldn't be thinking of a ghost touching her boob.
Was it her fault someone else had forced her to write on the devil's book, and that's why it happened? Nothing to do with the fact she was fooling around with a teenage boy. Probably.
No, probably not. Probably like a 70-year-old.
Yeah. Right, okay, moving on. Next was Anne Foster. Now, she was a widow in her 70s, and one of the main girls, Anne Putnam and Mary Walcott, claimed it was Anne that made Elizabeth Ballard ill. She was arrested and tortured, but refused to confess. Though she later confessed in an attempt to save her daughter, who was also now being accused, she would die in jail on December the 3rd, 1692, after 21 weeks in prison.
Oh.
So at this point, some of them, rather than executing, they are starting to leave them in prison. But obviously then also means a lot of them are dying this way because the conditions are shit.
Yeah.
So next is Dorcas Hoare and...
Yeah.
Now, she's a widow. She was found guilty and sentenced to be hung. She then confessed with the support of several ministers, and with the support of several ministers was given a temporary reprieve. She had been accused of fortune-telling and burglary, but she did survive. So, good. She kind of escaped.
Dorcas.
Next is Elizabeth Howe, and she's in her early 50s. She was long suspected of witchcraft and pricking a child who would then suffer fits. She was arrested on May the 28th, 1692, and apparently the accusers were faced with Elizabeth on trial. When faced with her, they fell into fits. She was found guilty and hanged on July the 19th, 1692. I also like the whole pricking a child thing. I feel like this is something I would be accused of because a child would piss me off.
Yes.
And I'm like, do that all, like, prick it in the air. I'm like, piss off, you piece of shit. And then next thing I know, I've got someone banging on the door, like, you're a witch. And also, I'm like, no, the child was just a knobhead.
Yeah, that. And the bird thing will go against you.
Yeah.
Something else. You swear. How dare you?
Oh, yeah. Probably have slammed a door.
Yeah.
Man probably fell out of a tree in my presence. I have got a bit of a cackle as well, which really doesn't go in my favour. I know, but probably if I'm like, she has got a cackly laugh. She sounds like a witch.
I know, my laugh is silent.
Probably a good thing. Now, next is George Jacobs. Now, he was an illiterate elderly farmer. George's accusers was his granddaughter who implicated him in an attempt to save her own life. He was found guilty and hanged on the 19th of August, 1692. Which then brings me on to Margaret Jacobs, who was the granddaughter. Now, she was only 17 years old and she was arrested on the 10th of May, 1692. She knew the safest way out was to confess. She did just that, accusing her grandfather, and she went to prison. During her grandfather's trial, her conscience caught up with her and she recanted her confession, though it had no effect. She remained in prison until January 1693, when she was released on bond.
I get accusing someone else, but your own granddad.
But did she sort of think at that point, like, he's quite old, maybe, like, they wouldn't kill him? They just, I don't know.
Depressed a man to death.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, when hers is hers in May, so that's slightly before the other guy was pressed. He was September.
Okay.
So at this point, did she think with him being elderly, they would see pity on him?
Yeah. Okay.
So, I don't know. It's a bit of a tricky one, isn't it?
Mm.
So next is Mary Lacey Jr. She was 18 and was described as disobedient. So she's a naughty girl.
She's a teenager.
Yes. Now, arrested on July the 20th for sundry acts of witchcraft on Eliza Ballard, Mary Warren also fell into a fit at the sight of her. Mary Lacey testified that she'd seen her mother flying on poles given by the devil. She was put in prison but released on October the 6th on a bond.
Okay.
So a lot of these are quite, again, different from Europe in the sense that they can actually get themselves out, which to me then is just weird anyway. Like, if you're just gonna let them be released on bond,
I think it's just a different jurisdiction, like, okay, different, yeah,
the other way they deal with it. Next was Mary Lacey Senior. She was obviously the mother of the other Macy. She was indicted for bewitching Mercy Lewis, convicted and sent to prison awaiting execution. She would be released when the trials were discredited, which I'll get on to a little bit later. But other than that, there wasn't really much on her. So that then brings me to another lady who, again, I could find very little on. It's basically her name and what she was executed for. So next is Susanna Martin, who was 71. She's a widow and was accused of recruiting people into witchcraft. She was then found guilty and hanged on July the 19th, 1692.
Okay.
So I don't know what else she would have. I don't know where that started. I don't know if there was some arguments with others, but I feel like she probably was involved in some sort of dispute with someone. Now, obviously, I mentioned someone earlier and I made reference to Rebecca Nurse, and that's who we're going to talk about next. Now, she was arrested on March the 23rd, 1692, based on accusations made by Edward and John Putnam. The 71-year-old was described as an invalid, so little old lady. Now, 39 people came to her defence and started a petition, and her trial began on June the 30th. At first, the jury ruled not guilty, but as the afflicted were still having fits, the judge got the jury back for a second hearing. The jury then changed their verdict to guilty, and she was sentenced to death on July the 19th, 1960.
Yeah.
On July the 19th, 1692. So she was one of the very early on ones to be executed. So yeah. I feel like, again, she was not long after the initial three. And I think as they were being executed, she was unaccused. So I think, again, I don't know, it's still early days, isn't it? I think they were all pretty much being executed at that point and they didn't really need much. I think it's only as you get into sort of September, October time that a lot of these are then being allowed to just put in prison. It wasn't any better, but there wasn't as many death sentences, if you like. I just don't like, there's so many of these are so old.
Yeah.
But yeah, so next is Elizabeth and John Proctor. Now, Elizabeth was born in 1650 and she married John Proctor on April the 1st, 1674 in Salem. Now, in early March 1692, the Proctor servant, Mary Warren, who was one of the main girls, began having fits. Say she saw the spectre of Giles Corey, who was the man who'd been pressed to death.
Mm-hmm.
John Proctor was dismissive of her claims and made Mary work harder. John felt that witchcraft should be suspected of the bewitched girls themselves and not the respectable women in the village. So he's quite setting up, so he's very much against these girls, which I agree with him on this.
Mm.
His obviously negative reaction to the girls is what caused Elizabeth to become the next accused of practicing witchcraft.
Yep.
Then on March the 26th, Mercy Lewis claimed that Elizabeth's spectre was tormenting her. Then on March the 29th, Abigail Williams joined in on the accusations, claiming the same as Mercy. Now, then in April 1692, 31 men filed a petition attesting to the upstanding character of John and Elizabeth, saying that they had seen nothing to suspect the pair of witchcraft. Again in May, a similar petition was filed containing 20 signatures. The petition questioned the validity of the spectral evidence. Then on June the 2nd, 1692, a physical exam was done of Elizabeth looking for witches' marks and no such marks were found. Then this carried on all the way into August, and on the 2nd of August, the court met to decide the couple's fate. During this time, John wrote his will but did not include Elizabeth. Some believe this was because he assumed she would be executed along with him. Both were found guilty still and sentenced to death. Elizabeth, who was pregnant at the time, was granted a stay of execution. John tried to postpone his own execution but failed. He was hung on August the 19th, 1692. Now, obviously, Elizabeth remained in jail. Action was eventually taken on the petition that John had filed to save his and his wife's life, and in January 1693, Elizabeth gave birth to a son, who she then named John Proctor III. For unknown reasons, she was not executed, but soon after the birth, was still alive in prison, and in May, when the remaining prisoners were ordered to be set free, it said that she's still alive, so I'm presuming she's been set free along with them.
Okay.
Although there's no records of what happened to her or her son afterwards.
Oh.
So these petitions were obviously in strong against them, but I just don't think they came in time for John.
Yeah.
And the only reason she's survived is purely because she was pregnant. If she hadn't been pregnant, she would have been executed on the same day as him, and it would have failed.
Yeah. I think that's just how it's always been. They protect the baby rather than the mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, like pro-life and all that shit. So next is Mary Toothmaker and Roger Toothmaker and their daughter Margaret
Toothmaker.
I don't think the one was a doctor, but I was really hoping they were going to be dentists.
No.
But they're not. A doctor, close enough. Now, obviously this is a family one. The father, Roger, was a doctor, and he was accused of witchcraft, but he would later die in prison.
Okay.
Now, Roger was known to practice natural forms of medicine, making him a folk healer. He also claimed that he specialised in detecting and punishing witches, so he kind of claimed to be a witch hunter.
Okay.
For years before the trials began, he bragged to locals that he was teaching his daughters his trade, and that one daughter killed a witch by boiling her in a pot of urine overnight.
Ugh.
That was disgusting. Why are you boiling urine? The smell.
Yeah.
Right. Despite his claims of
also,
being...
Also, you need a lot of pee.
Yeah,
to boil
is
someone.
Is she saving it? So it's like stagnant piss.
Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Throw it
out. Or is she getting everyone else's pots of piss?
You need was a it... lot.
Maybe she's just collecting the whole villagers. Although, you know when people send in urine samples to the doctors?
Is that their food?
Right. Despite his claims of being a witch hunter, a warrant for his arrest was issued in May 1692. He was then arrested and sent to prison, but died before he made it to trial. His wife, Mary, would also be arrested along with their 10-year-old daughter, Margaret, but she wasn't the one who had apparently killed the witch. She was the other one.
Okay.
They allegedly afflicted Mary Walcott and Abigail Williams. When questioned, Mary admitted her husband's skills in practicing counter magic against witches and confirms that her daughter Martha had killed a witch. Mary later confessed to being a witch, saying that she'd had a dream with the devil in. She said that she signed the devil's book and that she'd been a witch for 2 years. Mary was imprisoned until the end of her trial but was released later. Her daughter's case never actually went to trial, and they were both released. Though that's not the end. Long after they were released, Indians attacked the town in which they lived. 15 people were killed, including Mary. Her daughter Margaret was kidnapped and never seen again. So another mystery.
Oh. Also, Roger's a bit of a shit witchfinder if he's married to one.
Yeah.
Also, why is that kid not punished for boiling someone to death?
I don't know.
Did she actually boil someone to death or
I'm
not?
I'm guessing not. I'm guessing it was just him bragging. There was no evidence of it.
Especially because that's too much pee.
I just imagine the smell.
Yeah.
It's like walking into the men's toilets. You know when you're at school, the boys' toilets always fucking stunk.
Disgusting.
Like, what are they doing? Are they pissing over everything?
I think so.
Like, how did they not walk out with piss all up each other? Because it does, honestly. It used to smell like they just fucking pissed everywhere.
Yep.
Anyway, back to the case. Next was Samuel Wardwell. Now, William Baker Jr. Accused the Wardwell family of witchcraft. Samuel, along with his wife and daughter, all confessed the day they were arrested. Samuel was executed after retracting his forced confession. His wife and daughter were released, and he was hung on September the 22nd, 1692. Now, I couldn't find out exactly what they were accused of. There really wasn't much written. But yeah, they were another one. Obviously, he died, but the wife and daughter were okay. But is that because they agreed with the confessions, and does that go back to the whole, they have confessed, so it's fine? And obviously, he's retracted his, so...
Yeah.
And obviously, if he's retracted and it's accepted, then it also, I suppose, cast out over everyone else that's confessed, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah.
So is his more a punishment to keep everyone quiet and keep them in line, I sort of feel...
Think so.
Which is also probably why it's not very well recorded.
Mm.
Then next was Sarah Wilds. Now, she had previous convictions of fornication, of which she'd been whipped for. When she married her husband, his former in-laws were related to the Putnam family. Now, they were massive accusers in this. And the family held a grudge against Sarah. She was arrested on the 21st of April, 1692. Then a lady called Deliverance Hobbs claims that Sarah's apparition almost tore her apart as she lay in bed, and claims that Sarah recruited her to attend a black mass. Her trial was held on June the 30th, and Sarah was found guilty. She was then executed on July the 19th, 1692.
No.
How are you supposed to tear someone in half? I don't really know. Yeah. I feel like she probably had a bad dream and then woke up from it and was like, I felt like I'd been torn apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very strange.
I don't like any of these. Also, that woman being whipped for fornicating.
Yeah.
And she might have been into that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But, you know what? Kinky stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe. So next is John Willard. Now, he was serving as a constable. He began to doubt the truth of the accusations being made and in May 1692 refused to take part in any more arrests. This then obviously made him a target. So all those that he's claimed not to believe, obviously including the girls and their families, were now making accusations against him, as well as family members who claimed that he'd beaten his wife. His in-laws were said not to have liked him before the trial and didn't approve of his marriage to their daughter. He proclaimed his innocence but was found guilty and hung on August the 19th, 1692. Okay. So he was a good guy. He was obviously in with the police, and initially I don't think he really had a choice in it. He was obviously forced to arrest these accused. I think he pretty quickly cottons on that it's basically bullshit,
mm-hmm.
and tries to stand up for it, thinking, oh, I'm a policeman, like, people, maybe someone will listen. But actually, because so many people have been so quickly turned, he then finds himself a target of the whole thing, which is obviously not very good.
No.
So, and obviously, basically, it just goes to prove that you're not safe no matter who you are.
Nope.
So, next is George Burroughs. Now, he was the only minister to be executed. So, again, like Lisbon, very high up.
Mm.
Now, he is best known for reciting the Lord's Prayer during his execution, which was something believed that witches could not do.
Mm.
So, he's really kind of poo-pooed things for everyone, because if he was a witch, which is what they've supposedly found him guilty of, he wouldn't be able to do this. Now, he was executed on August the 19th, 1692, age 42. Now, his accusations came about after a former congregation sued him for debt. He was found guilty based on evidence that he had extraordinary feats of strength. His failure to baptise his children was also used as evidence. So, it's like, you're not following the church, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So, classic one of, yeah, you're not being a sheep and following everyone else. So, you are sinful and therefore a witch.
Yeah. Got nothing to say.
Yep. So then that then brings me on to Mary Parker. Now, she was the daughter of Sarah Parker, who was also accused. Now, Mary was 55 when she was executed on the 22nd of September 1692. She proclaimed her innocence, saying she must be mistaken for another woman with the same name. But I really couldn't find much more on her. And the same with the next lady called Alice Parker. I think, I'm not sure whether she's actually a relative of the others, it didn't say, or whether she's just, it's another name that's very similar. So, she was executed on the 22nd of September as well, and little is known about her trial, but it's said that she was accused of bewitching. So, I'm guessing she's been lumped in with the girls. I think she was one of those, the girls just accused as they went round. Next was Anne Pudisar. She was a wealthy widow. Now, she was accused of bewitchment, which caused a neighbour's wife's death, supposedly. And she did this by appearing in spectral form. She was said to be causing a man to... this is the one. She's the one that was accused of causing a man to fall out of a tree. She was also accused of turning herself into a bird. But most allegations were made by Mary Warren and Anne Putnam against her, saying that they fell into fits. And she was executed on the 22nd of September. So yeah, she was the one that supposedly made that man fall out of a tree. I told you, it's absolute bullshit.
Yeah, he shouldn't be in the tree anyway. He's a grown man. The branch probably snapped on the weight of him and he's like, it was you!
Yeah, she's on the opposite side of the field.
She's like,
I didn't do anything. But yeah, I don't know. Anyway, next, we're nearly at the end of these people. We've got two more. So next was Wilmot Reed, and he was apprehended on May the 28th. They'd never met the accusers until they'd been brought before them, and the girls obviously immediately fell into fits, supposedly.
Yeah.
They were then executed on the 22nd of September 1692, but I couldn't find anything else for that person.
Hmm.
And is Margaret Scott. Now, she was executed on the 22nd of September 1692. Like Wilmot, she was arrested after being presented with the accusers, and they then obviously fell into fits. Someone also claimed that she turned invisible to hit Captain Wycombe with a stick. I feel like the stick fell from a tree, hit him in the head, but she was supposed to apparently be invisible and like be going around prodding people with sticks. I think he just got hit on the head with a falling stick.
Yes, he did.
Much of the evidence against her was based on events that had happened 5 to 10 years previously. So, yeah, they weren't even bothered. It was this for me is where this trial then just got really fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And, people just went really bizarre.
I think that's what it is. It's just mass hysteria.
Yeah. So, obviously, all we can take from this...
it's all fake.
Yeah. And obviously, so basically what the judges were doing were they were parading the accusing girls around Salem, taking them to suspected witches in pretty much every case. As soon as the girls saw the supposed witch, they would obviously then fall into a fit. And then this is obviously how all the cases end up at trial. You can see how many were so suspicious of the girls, and you see that in some of these accusers that they're pointing it out, but no one really seems to stand up for it. And what I also don't understand is, how did these girls then not end up on trial? Because of all the things that they're now supposedly doing, like signing the devil's book and like all the naughty little things, like surely now they're witches. That's why I don't get, how are they now not on trial?
I think because they accused, they're getting rid of the bad ones.
Oh yeah, okay, they're ridding them.
So they're
but even
not...
so, I don't believe how anyone could believe a word they said.
It's just because it's hypocrites. The hypocrites. It's so frustrating.
It's like weirdly in comparison to yours, it wasn't it's not like they were just going after poor people. So you're like, oh, okay, it's a bit better. It's not defined by class.
Mm.
But at the same time, I feel like these ones have got the most stupid excuses out of all of the ones.
The man that accused his own wife ended up pressed to death. Why? What's wrong with the kids? Why aren't they being accused?
I don't get it.
Aye.
But yeah, so basically, I'm now going to talk about how it came to an end. Now, the trials actually ended in May 1693. Now, after weeks of informal hearings, a man named Sir William Phipps, who was the governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony, added himself into the trial proceedings. The trials had grown out of control and hundreds were now in prison. So I think it's becoming a problem in the prisons. They're overcrowded and they're full. Yep. Now, as the trial continued throughout the end of 1692, accusations had extended beyond the boundaries of Salem Village and into surrounding communities. Governor Phipps' wife was then accused, and he ordered that a new court be established, one that would not allow spectral evidence. So part of it is he's only got involved once his wife's been accused, but at the same time, he's actually looking into it properly, and he's throwing out spectral evidence, which is a step in the right direction.
Yes.
So then by May 1693, Phipps pardoned anyone who was in prison and accused of witchcraft. It's worth noting that the trials didn't stop because people stopped believing in it, but because people stopped believing that they were doing an effective job of identifying the witches. So there was still a big problem, and people were still very scared of the witches, but they felt like, especially with the girls, it got so out of hand. And like I said, literally, the reason those prisons were getting crowded, because as every time... in order for people to save their own skin, they accused someone else. But then that meant like a neighbour or this and that. So basically the prisons were just filled with villagers.
Yeah.
And the prisons couldn't do anything about it anymore. They had nothing to do. But also, I feel like it was an impact on the surrounding communities because they didn't have any workers anymore.
Yeah.
Because everyone's in fucking prison.
And then it would be so many accused that the jailers themselves were in the jail.
Yeah.
And then they're like, who's running this? I don't know.
Yeah. So obviously it had to come to an end.
Of course.
So then obviously this is a good few years later in 1697, in the January of that year, the General Court of Massachusetts declared a day of fasting and contemplation for the tragedy. I can't say the word, but yeah. The same month, Samuel Sewell, one of the judges, publicly acknowledged his own error and guilt in the proceedings.
Oh.
Then in 1702, the General Court declared that the trials had been unlawful. In 1706, Anne Putnam Jr., who was one of the girls accused doing the accusing, apologised for her role as an accuser. But by 1711, 22 of those who had been convicted and executed were exonerated by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And then this takes me on to much later in 1957. the state of Massachusetts formally apologized for the trials, but it wasn't until 2001 that the remaining people who had been convicted were finally exonerated. Mm. So it took a very long time for them to recognize no one should be killed.
It's similar with the Scottish ones.
Yeah. Mm. So obviously these witch trials didn't just impact those at the time, but it actually impacted all the other court proceedings. And it would have, obviously, an impact on the whole court system. It basically, it helped to ensure that going forward, everyone had the right to legal representation. Now, in terms of the witch trials before and during the witch trials, people were presumed guilty and had to prove their innocence. But a new law brought in after this meant that everyone was presumed innocent until proven guilty. So,
and that's how it should be.
Yeah. So, basically, the actual trials and obviously then everything that the Sir William guy, when he came in, he then changed, he flipped it round, which was obviously a good thing.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, if his wife hadn't been accused, how much longer would the Salem trials have gone on for?
Yeah.
Yeah, I said it was absolutely ridiculous. Now, I have got a bit on the witch hunters in Salem Rossi is a big part and a bit more on the girls, but I don't want to touch on that in this because this is already a very long episode. So I'm going to mention that in the Witch Hunters episode that we do in a couple of weeks' time. So I'll be adding onto that just so I don't know. I'm not eating your ears off and Natasha hasn't got 10 hours of episodes to edit today. But yeah, hopefully you've enjoyed that. Enjoyed all the nonsense that was the accusations of the Salem trials. And yeah, like I said, I don't understand how you can...
No.
I can understand why eventually it was condemned, why it took so fucking long for it to be condemned. I say as long and it wasn't. It really, it happened all within a year.
Yeah.
So in terms of the time...
But it's a long time.
Yeah. You could see how quickly that hysteria spread.
Yeah.
And like I said, the impact it had, it took, like, it was like a wildfire. It took up very quickly, didn't it? Mm. But yeah, so hopefully you have enjoyed this episode. If you want to leave some comments on Patreon or over on our Instagram page, let us know what you think about it. And hopefully, because obviously we're still very early on in the trials and they'll be around online for a while. If there's anyone else you know that you think might be interested in these, if you want to give them a little heads up and send them in our direction, we'd be incredibly grateful.
Yes.
Yeah. In the meantime,
keep creeping.
And we'll keep digging.